From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Thursday, May 8th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese, hawa, toks, gnusum, salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us behind the scenes on the live stream, backstage in the studio on YouTube at kto.org/jpmlive or KTOO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, May is National Foster Care Awareness Month, and Tlingit and Haida will help break down the numbers and share how you can help. May is also Mental Health Awareness Month, and Aaron Surma from NAMI Juno shares about events and happenings and support around Juno this month. The Juno Community Foundation's got news on grant programs and scholarships, and Juno Jazz and Classics is in full swing. Rachel Disney is here with a sneak peek at what's coming up this weekend and beyond. A full conversation on this beautiful day on this Juno afternoon. Curious Juno from the KTOO News team is back and launches next week. Join us next Tuesday, May 13th, for a special Juno afternoon with Adeline Baxter, KTOO's digital content director, as we look back at some of the wonderful Curious Juno questions that you've loved and a sneak peek at what's ahead for the coming season. For more, you can head over to kto.org/curiousjuno. Also next week, David Sedaris, writer, satirist, and all-around funny human, is back in Juno on Thursday, May 15th for one night only, and it's a fundraiser for KTOO. He'll tell some tales and do a meet and greet and sign books for everyone. Get more info and tickets at kto.org/Sedaris. A great way to have some laughs and support KTOO in the process. Good cheese. You are listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us live in the studio on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. Kind of cheesh. The numbers are staggering. Alaska's rate of children in foster care is more than double the United States rate, and 68% of the children in state custody are Alaska Native or American Indian. May is National Foster Care Awareness Month, and our first guests are from Tlingit and Haida to share more with us. I have Dara Relatos, Special Projects Coordinator. Gonna cheese, wasi iti Dara, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, it's good to have you here. And I also have Casey Grote, Tlingit Family and Youth Services Manager. Casey, wasi iti, how are you? Gonna cheese?
Good, thank you for having us.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Where do we start with this? I mean, you sent me this awesome PDF, which has amazing amounts of numbers and staggering statistics, really, in terms of that we are more than double the rate of foster care or children in custody of the state, right? Why is that? Do we know why that is, Casey?
That's a very complicated question.
Yes.
And unfortunately, there's no direct answer to mm-hmm. that. There's many reasons we see these numbers. And if we had, you know, the magic answer, we would do something about it immediately. But it's a complex problem, which is why we're here today, to really get awareness out about the child welfare system and different ways people can get involved to help these children and families.
Yeah.
Ideally, to prevent them from coming into foster care in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
One of our programs at TFYS is our family well-being program that offers prevention services to families to hopefully never see them enter the foster care system. When children do enter the foster care system, we hope to have them placed with families from the get-go. Unfortunately, there's a shortage of foster homes, which is one of the things we're really wanting to do a call for action here today, is just to express that need. But also how we could wrap supports around these children and families to get them back home whenever safely possible.
I see. And does Tlingit and Haida interface with the state agencies that work with placing the children in the foster home? Is that how the process works? Is it through the state that they are placed in the foster home?
Yes. Our ICWA workers that we have involved, and we intervene in the state case as legal parties. We get discovery. We have a clear understanding of why the children were removed. Hopefully we were a part of that investigation when possible, when we have staff in the area that can do that. But with the state ultimately having jurisdiction in these particular types of cases, they do make those placement decisions. But as a legal party, we do have a voice in the different decisions being made and can state what our position is in court.
So if someone... So you're saying that TFYS, Tlingit Family and Youth Services, can help families who have had children placed into foster care? Is that what you as a service are helping families deal with the state system and how that works?
Yes.
Okay.
Our family caseworkers, or ICWA workers, as many tribes refer to them as, they are legal parties in that, and so we advocate for what we see as a child's best interest. And that is what the other legal parties do as well, but we believe that we have a unique position as the tribe to be able to advocate what is best for that child. And we want to keep them connected with their family, their community, and their culture whenever possible. So that's one of the many things we advocate for. And one way to do that is family placements. When we can't find relatives who are able to be placement options, looking for placements in their own community and in their own region. Unfortunately, we're seeing many foster youth go between regions across the state. And that is a culture shock. That is, that creates more trauma. So really,
especially with Alaska being so large, right? And you
exactly.
be taken from your community and placed somewhere totally different. Just for those who don't know, can you tell me what ICWA is?
Yes, ICWA is the Indian Child Welfare Act. It was passed in 1978 after we saw way too many children, Indigenous children, being removed. For really no good reason, often. And so ICWA was passed to make sure there was a higher legal oversight and different components put in place, such as active efforts instead of reasonable efforts, looking at placement preferences, so children can be in their own, raised in their own culture whenever possible, and the need for qualified expert witnesses. And so there's several key components of ICWA, just so more attention can be put on these cases, so we could hopefully see better outcomes.
Yeah, I want to take a look at these numbers that you sent. If you're on the live stream, you can see hopefully these numbers. Well, I'll just mention some of them as we go through here. But right now, it says that there are over 2,400 children in the foster care system. And of those, 1,650 are Alaska Native or American Indian. It's more than double the rate. There was that we mentioned there before. And yeah, you have the ratio of how many children who are Native make up the population of the state, which is 28%, but then there's such disproportional amount of those who are in the foster care. And then the one that I wanted to get to here was this, which is what you were asking about, and I want to find out how people might be able to do this, but that there are 634 licensed foster homes. Only 120 of those are Alaska Native or American Indian homes. Mm-hmm. And overall, so are we saying that we don't have enough foster, there aren't enough people fostering children, and there's specifically, especially not enough Alaska Native or American Indian families fostering children? And so I guess we're raising awareness about that today, but then how do people go about getting involved if they want to get involved as a foster parent? That's a good question.
Well, yeah. There's a lot. We're working on our outreach right now in the tribe with TFYS, and we're trying to implement our own strategies with that. But we do encourage people to reach out to OCS, of course, and get more information there.
And OCS, for those who don't know?
Office of Children's Services.
Yes, okay, right. Great. Yep. And that's a state. That's a state-run organization, okay.
But especially Alaska Native or American Indian families can reach out to the TFYS department. And what is the correct email address that's being used for that right now? It's TFYS referrals, right?
That is one way to get a hold of us. Another way is, I believe it's on your flyer there, Boston Foster Care at Clinkin and Haida.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, I think that might be on the front page here. Let me pull that up so people can
Apologies
see.
Apologies for not having it written right
there
in front
it is.
Of me.
Foster Care at ClinkinandHaida.gov, and the phone number is 907-463-7169.
Yes.
And basically, I also want people to understand, like, Clinkett and Haida, you can help people figure out some of these ways of getting through the state rigmarole, right? Because I'm sure there's, like, red tape and filing, and you have to be approved to be a foster parent, I'm assuming. And, like, what are those requirements and all that kind of stuff that you would need to know to be able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But you're kind of hoping and asking people to step up and become foster parents.
Yeah, if you've been thinking about it, if you are thinking about it right now, I encourage you to look into it more. There's a lot of different ways that you could be a foster parent, whether that's temporary placements or more long-term. I believe I was told last night that there is also about to be like a foster almost trial kind of thing where you could be emergency placement home.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I don't know any details about that yet because
yeah.
I think it's something they're just starting, but that is also a potential option going forward.
I see.
And as Casey said earlier, we're really encouraging those small communities like Wrangell, Angoon, Cake, the places where there might not be very many options for a child who's removed from their home there but could stay within their community. And
yeah.
that can be non-Native families as well, as long as those that child could be close to home.
In their same community. Because I'm assuming disproportionately as well, like the smaller amount of people in a community, the less foster homes there might be percentage-wise, let's say, right,
in terms of that. As Casey said as well, you know, there are kids all over Alaska in really far from home locations.
Yeah, that would be tough.
It would be really, could you imagine
especially the age, like if you're like 4 or 5 and then you're taken from your place that you've only known and then you're on to some other, you know, part of Alaska that you have no idea about.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
that would be pretty wild.
No familiar faces.
Yeah. What are some of the other resources that you might want to share today? Is there other things that we want to mention?
Yeah, one of the things I know parenting is hard, and parenting, you know, it's not for everybody to sign up to be a foster parent, but
mm-hmm.
I really want to give a big thanks to anybody who is currently doing that or who is interested and willing to explore that option if they are able to open their homes and hearts to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I understand that is not for everybody, but there are other ways to wrap our arms around families and children who need that support. So one program that the Office of Children's Services has as well is becoming a community support provider, so a cultural support service provider. If you're able to provide some time to a parent who has an open case plan with OCS and help them with their healing journey, that's a great way to be able to support families during the difficult time, most difficult time of their lives. It is a lot of just suffering that people are experiencing. So any way that people can find to, you know, really offer support to families and children, whether it be offering respite to foster parents, having community events, you know, just supportive supports in place that could really assist in healing and hopefully return the children safely home to their parents. So, you know, foster care is such an important need, but we hope it's not one that the children have to linger in for
long. That it's not permanent. Yeah, that makes sense. Right. And as we wrap up, what's the best place for people to go to now if they want more information? Is it on the Tlingit and Haida? I love that your website's all brand new. I love that. I went there and I was like, whoa, look at this website upgrade that tlingitandhaida.gov has. Pretty cool. Yeah. Is there a page on there for TFYS?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Yep. Is there a slash that you want to give us? Is it just slash TFYS maybe? Or
honestly, this new website has really, I don't know.
It's everybody's brand because it's just, it's like recently launched,
it's
right?
It's very, very nice, but I do not know that.
Go check it out.
And Tlingit and Haida has so much that they do.
But there's a lot of great programs there.
Probably put in your favorite search engine, right? Like Tlingit Family and Youth Services, and it'll probably get you there.
It is Tribal
Family Youth Services. Sorry about that.
And the last thing I just wanted to say is compassion for everybody, for including the families who are struggling and their kids have been removed. I understand we want to be angry at them, but some compassion goes a long way in reuniting
Reuniting the families. And I know as a parent, like the number one thing, if you are considering becoming a foster parent, patience, especially with somebody, a young kid who may have been removed from their home far away and they're placed with you. And then so they might be a little confused by that, you know,
especially as the community holding those families up as well. And those kids.
Wow. Right. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Casey Grote, Dara Latos. Really appreciate it from Tlingit and Haida. It's National Foster Care Awareness Month. And hopefully we're all a little bit more aware. I really appreciate it. Gunnath Cheese for being here today.
Thanks, Boston.
Absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. Up next, we'll talk with NAMI Juno. But first, let's have a star party.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Ridgeback Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the tides. The ocean tides have been known about for thousands of years, millennia, but they were not understood until Isaac Newton published the Principia in the 17th century. So the tides on Earth, it turns out, are caused by two tidal bulges, one closest to the moon, and the second tidal bulge is the part of the Earth furthest from the moon. And those bulges are formed not because of the difference in the gravitational attraction of the moon on opposite sides, but because the water between the two bulges moves into those bulges. So those two high bulges, closest to the moon and furthest from the moon, are the two high tides that are separated a little more than 12 hours apart. And then between those two high tides are the two low tides, which is the horizontal section between the two tidal bulges. So every day, because of the moon's orbital motion, the tides are going to be almost 51 minutes later. And there's times of the year when we have the largest tides. that's typically the spring tide. And here in Juneau, when we had the spring tide at the full moon, the tombolos, which are islands that only connect at low tide, were all connected. That's the one out at Douglas, Shaman Island, and the island at Auk Rec, and the island where the public use cabin is in St. James Bay. This is Steve Kosas with the Reject Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at rejectplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us behind the scenes in the studio on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. Gunath Cheesh. This year's theme of Mental Health Awareness Month is In Every Story, Their Strength. With events and support groups, NAMI Juneau has resources available for folks to find out more. I'm joined now by Aaron Surma from NAMI Juneau. Wasiati, Gunath Cheesh, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's so awesome to see you again. Welcome back in. So it's not really a battle of the awareness months, but we just had National Foster Care Awareness Month.
A gathering of the awareness months.
Gathering. There we go. It's Mental Health Awareness Month. Okay, so what does that mean? Did you come up with the theme, or is this a national theme, In Every Story of Their Strength?
It's a national theme, and I don't know. I would argue that we talk about mental health every month.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there's just an excuse for us to come on the radio
right.
and chat about it a little bit more.
Just so you know, you can come on the radio anytime.
Oh, what a
I don't
power.
Need a special month for it. But it is an opportunity to get specific materials, maybe bring awareness to people who haven't heard or don't know enough about mental health. And it does seem, Aaron, that mental health has become more prevalent in our awareness over time, right? A lot of times when I was a younger person, it always was like, suppressed, don't talk about your feelings, you know, especially men, you know, don't talk about stuff, like put it away. It's not for public. You don't talk about your mental health. And now it seems like more people are willing to share their story and say, hey, you know what? Or at least even at work, like I need a mental health day. That's what people call it, right? Like
yeah.
I got to take some time for myself. Do you find that at NAMI Juneau? Do you see more of that in terms of people actually being aware of mental health?
Absolutely. I think people are much more adept at identifying what's going on with themselves. I think especially young people, you know, diagnosing themselves. I think probably like diagnosing themselves with a fair bit of accuracy. I think that identifying issues has become much more common in our culture. And I think that people are also then making better decisions about what would make me feel better, what would improve my situation.
And we're learning more with the resources we have with places like NAMI Juneau, right? Where it's like, okay, I recognize that I'm having something going on, but I don't necessarily know what to do about it. And so we're finding more resources for that, yeah?
Yeah. And I think that going back to our special month here, In Every Story, Their Strength,
yeah.
I think that just talking it out, describing the issue, describing like the journey or the process of addressing the issue has strength in and of itself.
Mm.
And so I think looking for solutions kind of is a part of the solution because talking creates connection.
Right.
Being vulnerable is scary, but then you do the scary thing and it ends up being better. So
right.
I think just by virtue of having those conversations, it's helpful. Plus getting to actual treatment or support services that can dive more deeply into the specific symptoms that somebody might be experiencing.
And I know, I think last time you were here, we talked about, you know, you have your own sort of journey with mental health. And does this, what does this month do for you in terms of that? I know, of course, you're leading this organization, which is you're passing on the good work that you've learned. But is there something specific for you that's highlighted this month?
I love that question. I think it makes me reflect more. I think I like having the actual theme to it. If it was just Mental Health Awareness Month, I don't know that I would have any specific connection. I probably wouldn't be doing a lot of examination of anything. It would be a part of my job to be on the radio. And but I think with the theme in every story, there's strength. That gives me a little bit to reflect on, like, how does storytelling come about in my life? And where is there strength? And what sense does strength exist there? And so I think reflecting on my experience storytelling, which is a scary thing.
Yeah.
And how that's been helpful for me.
Yeah. Storytelling. You mean in terms of getting up in front of people or?
Either one-on-one or in front of groups of people. I think like being vulnerable and saying, I've struggled with these things. These are the experiences that I've had.
I got you.
I was scared for this reason. Yeah. Stuff that I have been ashamed of and spent sometimes decades not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the past 5, 8, 10 years have been talking about a lot more.
Right, right. Being able to bring that up. And I see. And that's awesome. So what are some of the things that are happening this month that people can do with NAMI Juno?
Yeah, so we have all of the stuff that we normally do, but we also have a couple special events. There is a mental health book displayed at Hearthside Books. They put together a nice collection of books that relate to mental health that discuss different topics related to people addressing their mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
The library also has a collection of books available. They've got some suggestions that are relevant to this theme. And I think books can be great to make sense of your own story. You know, you can read someone else's story and see what fits with your experience and what doesn't.
Mm.
You can see how people craft their narrative around their experiences, which can help you just have a more full or thorough conversation with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to develop a vocabulary around a new topic unless you're exposed to other people doing the same thing and practicing that skill. So books are a piece of it. We also have a free library that we have that folks are welcome to come by and check out and grab some books that we have available.
Nice.
We also have a gardening, nature, and mental health workshop, and that's May 17th from 1 to 2:30. That's being led by Nels Olson, who's a therapist in town.
Mm.
And folks can show up to that and learn about a topic that's relevant in the spring, if we consider the spring.
Well, it's interesting.
And how it relates to mental health.
Because, like, gardening, like, I was going to ask this in terms of things that, you know, that you do or others do. Like, I know for me, like, music is very calming. Like, having some sort of, you know, app or just music that isn't, like, you know, that can, whatever music that is for you. It might be something different genre-wise. But that's calming. Like you said, there's books you can read, passages from books. I've been reading, actually my partner's been reading to me these poems, Mary Oliver poems, and unbelievable just in terms of how it makes you feel, and sort of a calming presence and knowing that people are writing about this and that kind of thing. Are there specific, apps or books that you love that help you?
Yeah. And they help in different ways. So there's a lot of things that I've learned are helpful to me over time.
Mm-hmm.
Gardening is one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, like an activity too, right? The activity.
And it's a lot of trial and error and really examining what do I want right now and is this thing doing the trick? Mm-hmm. And one example that I give is video games. There's a lot of video games I play just to stop thinking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say those are helpful. I wouldn't endorse that.
Right.
But there are a couple video games I play. I play them with other friends. I play them, you know, couple hours a month, and they're like a certain level of intensity where I can't think of anything else while they're happening, and they hit a real sweet spot for me, because regardless of how I was feeling before I started playing, it feels like a nervous system reset afterwards.
Right,
it's just an intense thing, and there's a dramatic conclusion, and then we're on the other side of it, and it's done, and
it's
a similar physical experience to exercise.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a video gamer myself. I love storytelling in video games. Mm-hmm. And it does. It can wrap you up and take you away for a little bit. Yeah, which is nice. That's really cool. And then, of course, you mentioned the things that always happen. Can you remind us of a couple of those groups that might be that we want to highlight for this month specifically?
I would love to. We have a group called Connection Support Group, and that's for people to talk about their own mental health. And we have it in person on Wednesday evenings. We also have it online a couple times a month. We have a separate support group for people who are supporting a loved one's mental health. Mm. We call it Family Support Group. And I think that one I always want to highlight because there aren't a lot of alternatives for that.
Mm.
You know, if you're struggling to support someone else's mental health and you want some advice or encouragement or just other people who relate, that's one of the few things that are available. So like the Connections group, the Family Support Group meets both in person and online at different times. And you can find our calendar at namijuno.org. The calendar is right on the homepage, and it lists when those groups happen. They're free. They're drop-in. You don't have to sign up in advance or anything else. We also have a group that happens once a month for people who have lost a loved one to suicide, Survivor Support Group. And then we have a class that we don't have scheduled, don't have the next generation scheduled, but we have a wait list on our website. It's called Peer Support Specialist. It's a 40-hour class where people examine their own experience in recovery from substance use or mental illness and talk about and think about how they can support other people's recovery while using their own experience. And so I think that's the closest that we get to having a class that really coaches you on telling your recovery story.
Mm.
We spend 40 hours, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, examining what recovery means, what has helped us in our recovery, and how can we use our story in a way that's supportive to others.
I love that. That's really cool. There's so much that Nami Juno does. And of course, you gave the website namijuno.org. There's also another website that you alerted me to, junomentalhealth.org. Which has some other resources and links that people can find out more information. I love having Nami Juno on the show, whether it's Mental Health Awareness Month or not. Aaron, thank you so much. Is there anything else? Did we miss anything?
I think we did a great job.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure we got all that because there's so many classes and things. But don't forget the Gardening, Nature, and Mental Health Workshop with Niels Olsen. That's on May 17th from 1 to 2:30. And, of course, as Aaron said, you can find that on the calendar on their homepage at namijuno.org. That's namijuno.org. Aaron, Gunath Cheesh for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Gunath Cheesh.
Okay, up next, we will talk with the Juno Community Foundation about scholarships and grants and all kinds of stuff. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO, but up next, we're going to hear a little savory moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Step into the savory moment. Nora Marks Dauenauer was a Tlingit writer and scholar from Hoonah, Alaska. At the age of 81, she received the National Book Award and at 85 began serving a 2-year term as Alaska State Writer Laureate. Nora was also a recipe developer. Here are some paraphrased highlights from her poem, How to Make Good Baked Salmon from the River. Salmon is best made in fish camp over an alder fire, but you can also use an electric oven and a fry pan. Have seal or eulogan oil on hand. Wesson oil or butter may be substituted. When cleaning the fish, toss scraps to the seagulls and ravens. They're family after all. If cooking by fire, insert alder steaks through salmon flesh as if threading a needle through cloth. Then sit back and enjoy the sight of red meat and silvery skin. Listen to the grease crackle and smell it on the breeze. This is so important. Mash some berries, adding seal oil and water. Think how nice this dessert will taste after the salmon. If you don't have berries, open a can of fruit cocktail. Prepare a serving platter. Harvest a leaf of skunk cabbage, but first fold it into a cup and drink from the cool stream. If unavailable, substitute paper plates and cups and water from the faucet. After inhaling the scent of cooked salmon, skunk cabbage, and berries, drizzle fish with seal oil and watch it run over the now flaky flesh. To eat, start with the head, eyes, cheeks, nose, and jawbone, then the body. Suck the fins and nibble the crispy skin. Finally, the meat, oozing with juices. Take a sip of water and enjoy how much sweeter it tastes after the salmon. Now it's time to tell stories. If there are no stories, jokes and small talk will do. Serve with beer, tea, or coffee. Gunesh Cheesh for coming to Nora's Barbecue. Find a link to Nora Mark's Dowan Hour's poem, How to Make Good Baked Salmon from the River, at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I am joined now by Christy Chambor and Monica Doherty from Juno Community Foundation, who are here to share about grants and scholarship programs. Gunath Cheesh, Ha Yadi, thank you so much. Wasi T. Christy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm excellent.
It's great
I'm
to
excellent.
See your face.
And Gunath Cheesh, Wasi T. Monica, how are you?
I'm doing great.
How's your art going?
It's going good.
Good.
Working when I can.
Yeah, working when you can, and then, you know, dealing with your day job, too, which is also cool. You have a really cool day job.
She does.
And
yeah.
I get to work with Christy.
And you get to work with... I got to work with Christy for just a little bit. Awesome times. So that's really cool. So let's get started. We're going to talk about scholarships and grants. Let's start with scholarships.
Yeah. So the scholarships closed out mid-April, and we will be announcing the winners on Monday, May 12th.
That's next Monday.
Yes. And so we're very proud of all of the recipients. We've had our most applicants ever. So it seems like more people are knowing about it, and it feels really good to just be able to support our students. So without getting... anything away, I'm not going to name who got them, but I'll just because we like to keep it a surprise.
You gotta wait till Monday.
I will just kind of share that we had about 60 applicants. 33 students received scholarships this year, and that's Southeast wide. We'll be giving out about $40,000 in scholarships. And
wow.
So that feels pretty awesome.
That's pretty. And where do those come from, all the different funds that are for those scholarships, right? I know we've gone over those in the past.
I think we have five scholarships, student scholarships for the spring.
I see.
Go around. So that's the Alma Harris, Simon and Anna Kirk Family Scholarship, Bob Studi Scholarship. The Hathers and the Margaret Rands Brady, which are both out of Skagway. And and we're so grateful to all the donors to make them possible to support the students.
And that's fantastic. And are those, I know at Juno Community Foundation, people can go on the website and learn about all the different funds and participate if they want to. Can they participate in those as well, like in terms of this?
Individuals donating?
Yeah.
They can.
Okay.
So just like any of our other funds
that they can find. Okay.
Yeah, they can be part of.
Well, congratulations to all the students in advance, I guess.
Happy
scholarship winning on Monday. You can go on Monday and find out. Are you going to announce it on your website or in a press release, or how does that work?
We'll have a press release going out on Tuesday morning first thing, and then it'll be up on our website at some point on Tuesday as well. And people can check it out there. It's junocf.org.
Yeah, junocf.org is the great place for Juno Community Foundation. Okay, and then, Christy, we're talking about annual report, which is always an awesome thing.
Yeah, we just wanted, I think Amy was here to visit you, and it was just about to come out. So Strength Through Collaboration is our 2024 annual report. It is available on the website, so you can take a look at it there. And it just highlights members of our community, really wonderful and generous individuals and couples and families that do so much for our town. And then also highlights the work that we do, including our work with Legacy and Planned Giving. This time of year seems to be a very popular time for people to revisit and look at their wills and trusts, make adjustments as necessary. And there's some really, really great information in here about legacy gifts and planned gifts and the impact that they have on our community, both now and into the future.
Right.
Yeah.
So if people are thinking about that, they can go there and find out more.
Yeah, they can find out, you know, it highlights some of the folks that have already given those types of gifts and then the different ways that you can do it. There's a multitude of ways. And we always just stress, speak to your professional advisor, tell them what your wishes are, and then look at what we do and figure out how that will all tie together. And we can make a lot of things possible. It's a conversation, an ongoing conversation. We know things that might be important now might not be important in 10 years, or they shift and change in different ways. So we, you know, keep those doors open and conversations going. And
And the thing about that some people don't know, so I'm just going to have you explain it real quick, Christy, is how the Juno Community Foundation works. Because we talked about there's these scholarship funds. We've talked about, you know, different other funds and different other, like, community members highlighted. But Juno Community Foundation is like a holding organization, umbrella. Break it down for me real
quick. So we our whole mission is to promote philanthropy, and we do that in several different ways. You know, that's your time, your talent, your resources, basically. And we try to, you know, take what a donor wants to do, their wishes, and then match them with the organizations and programs that make all of that possible.
I see.
And in some cases, there are donors that want funds to continue their, you know, philanthropic giving. So we have a variety of funds. We have endowments. We also work with local nonprofits who have agency funds with us, including KTOO.
Yes, KTOO
has a legacy foundation is housed with us.
Yeah.
And, you know, really for us, we're kind of the vessel and to support these organizations and to support the programs and services that our community needs.
I see. Okay, that's really cool. And one of those is the Douglas Dornan, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
The Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund has been with us for many, many years, and their grant application period is open now.
Open now?
Yes. So for nonprofits and service providers, you can go online to our website to read the criteria for the grants, and they're due June 1. It's coming on up.
And it's already like, what is it, May 8th already, which is just this year is just flying by.
I know.
Summer is here. It's so good. But that means that if the Douglas Dornan is for nonprofit organizations in town, right? Do they have to be a specific kind of nonprofit, or is it any nonprofit?
They do. Correct me on this, but also it's open to nonprofits in Southeast.
Oh,
that's
Southeast.
Also important. Okay. So, yeah, for listeners in neighboring Southeast communities, they can also apply.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Douglas Dornan has historically supported health and social service organizations, art organizations, and education. Those seems to be the three big ones.
The three bullets, yeah.
Yeah. Also, they've brought some institutions have, you know, brought speakers down to talk at symposiums and things like that. So it'll be pretty clear on the website, but those are like the big
ones. I'm just thinking for people who might be listening, if they're at a nonprofit, like those are the three ones, health and social services, arts, and education. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, three very in need areas,
yes,
right?
So, very much.
And the Douglas Dornan, and what is that award usually? Is it multiple of awards for that one?
Yeah. So last year, I think it was awarded to 17 organizations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So quite a few, and they typically ranged from $1,000 to $3,000.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So not huge project, but if you got a little something that you're trying to get done, then the Douglas Dornan might be able to help you out.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then hot on the heels of the Douglas Dornan, our individual artist awards will be announcing that grant program application period opening. Sorry, it was a jumble.
That's a lot.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
That'll be happening in June. We haven't quite settled on a date, but it's usually the early to mid part of June. The application becomes available, and then those are typically due the end of August.
And those are different, because I know that Jack does like an individual artist award. This is totally separate.
Totally separate from that. This is our own award program that we run. And as long as you're a local working artist, it's not a scholarship, so it doesn't apply for students. You can apply. And it also fits for folks that are working as part of a group or a collaborative. In the past, we've had awardees that have been writers or actors working with Theater Alaska, for example. And they've been recipients. And we encourage that. We you know, a strong local arts community makes for a really fun community. Robust and fun.
And what is the range of that award for folks who might
So we haven't quite figured out what the breakdown will be. In the past, we've done $2,500 awards and $5,000 awards. One year, we did do one $10,000 award. We know that it'll be about $25,000 that we're giving out this year in honor of our 25th anniversary.
Congrats.
And the information will be forthcoming on how we're going to break that out for artists this year.
And you all have, like, social media and stuff, right?
Because
artists are notorious to not go to websites, but I'm sure that they will scroll on their social medias and find things. So if you want to follow...
I haven't cracked the code on artists, Monica.
Don't ask me. We know that I'm
on there. She needs a website still, so it's all good. But we
never
lived
that down.
But do you have a Instagram, or how do we find you?
You can follow us on Instagram. We're at Juno Community Foundation is our handle. It's the same thing on Facebook. And so information will be in both of those places in addition to our website.
Yes, absolutely.
So make it there.
Follow those socials. You'll see when they announce it. If you're an individual artist looking to get a little project money, or is it have to be a specific project for the artist grant, or can it just be like, hey, I'm an artist, I need this money?
So we like to fund specific projects, things that we know will have an end date in about a year. That's what we're looking for.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So if you have a show coming up, that our grant would be a good fit for that. Those type of things.
Awesome. Christy Chambor, Monica Doherty from the Juno Community Foundation. As always, you can find everything, all the announcements at junocf.org, or as Christy just said, follow them on socials at Juno Community Foundation. Gonna cheese for coming in. Congrats to the scholarship winners. That'll be announced early next
week.
Thank
you for everything, Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. Gonna cheese for being here.
Up
next, we will preview what's coming up from the Juno Jazz and Classics. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Hit the gym before work or after? This is Sandra Tsinglo with the lowdown on science. Paul Arciero from Skidmore College and team wondered, does time of day make a difference with exercise? They assigned over 50 people to work out in the morning or evening. After 12 weeks, they measured effects on participants' health, mood, and body metrics. And all participants showed improved health regardless of exercise time. Women won more upper body strength gains with evening workouts, but lost more stomach fat from morning ones. Evening exercise improved men's cholesterol and blood pressure and boosted everyone's mood. So if you have specific goals, consider the time you work out. As for me, the best time to exercise today is always tomorrow.
The Lowdown on Science is a production of LAist 89.3.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka K Jin Tauk Anakaya Haanikach, Gunshish.
From KTOO, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Thursday, May 8th. Sunrise was at 4:45 this morning. We'll see sunset at 9:04 this evening. A total of 16 hours, 18 minutes, and 16 seconds of daylight today. A gain of 4 minutes and 32 seconds over yesterday. And taking a look back at this day in 1937, the Taku River rose enough to give the Taku Trading Company's riverboat, Jeannie, an opportunity to make her first trip of the season down the river from Tulsaqua and into Juneau. That's a look back at this day in 1937. This is KTOO.
You're listening to Community Support at Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO, and live streaming on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I appreciate y'all being here. The annual Juno Jazz and Classics is in full swing, with performances happening now through May 17th. There is a little something for everyone. Rachel Disney from Juno Jazz and Classics joins me now to look ahead to some of the upcoming events this weekend. Gunath Cheesh, for being here. Wasiati, Rachel, how are you?
Hey, Boston, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
So we had, I think we had Zool on, artistic director of Juno Jazz and Classics, was on last week, and sort of we were kicking off. We had the kickoff party on Friday night a week ago. And then you had some weekend events, right?
We did. We had Mark and Maggie come in on Saturday, and then Zool and Brian Wallach played a classical concert on Sunday. And
we're
gearing up for blues for this weekend.
We're switching gears. And tomorrow there's a concert, right? Who's tomorrow?
Tomorrow is going to be Memphis Gold. So they actually just flew in a couple of hours ago, so they're getting settled in. They're at the Glacier right now. But they're going to be doing a free brown bag concert at noon tomorrow at the Jack. And then they're doing a blues dance in the evening time at 7 p.m. at the Jack. And we're doing a – I'm super excited because we are going to have a full-on dance floor, and we're going to do a pre-concert dance lesson. So for anyone who's purchased a ticket, we'll have tickets at the door too. But come at 6 o'clock or a little bit before then, and we're going to have a dance lesson just before the show.
Oh, that's cool. Like a blue, like some kind of blues?
Like a blues dance lesson. Like, yeah, if you didn't know you could dance the blues, then fully come out and learn how to dance the blues.
Wow. And then and they're going to be on the show tomorrow. We're going to get to meet them, which will be kind of cool. But what are they also the ones who are going to be doing the blues cruise on Saturday?
They are also doing the blues cruise. So you get three chances to see them. They're going to be, it's going to be pretty incredible.
And tomorrow, where's the noon concert at tomorrow?
At the Jack.
It's at the Jack. Okay.
Yes.
And that is free lunchtime?
Free lunchtime concert. We bus in kids, elementary school kids. So just be aware of that. We're going to have like 4 or 5 elementary school classes coming to the noontime concert, but it's open to the public. Anybody can come and see it. And then the artists interact with the kids and talk to them about music. It's really cool to watch.
Well, and that's a big deal, right? Because I think, you know, we have the public-facing performances that Jazz and Classics does.
Yes.
But part of the other thing that you do is you bring these artists in, and then they go into the schools, and they're doing that all week long, and or special concerts like this where you bust the kids in. And that's a big part of the mission, right?
It is. Our whole mission is that live music should be accessible to everyone. So we do our best to keep ticket prices low. And for those that can't necessarily afford it, we have the free concerts. And then for those who can't make it out to the venues, we bring the artists to them. So we send artists. Like today, Brian Wallach went to Wildflower Court to play for our elders there. Zool will be going to Catholic Community Services. We send them to Pioneer Home. We send them to Johnson Youth Center. We send them wherever we can get them in.
Yeah, absolutely. What a treat that is for those folks. You know,
that's my favorite part.
Yeah, because they can't get. I mean, I know when I did a play. I think it was last summer, and we would go to like the Pioneer Home, and you know, it's so wonderful to see folks who may not be able to get out, right, be able to still enjoy the arts in some way, which is really kind of cool. And then for those of us who can get out, we can go and enjoy. And I love this fact that there's going to be a dance happening.
Yeah, I'm super excited because I'm going to be out there dancing on the dance floor.
And you can learn. I'm just curious, like, how a blues dance is different than a regular dance. I'm really curious about that.
You're going to have to come out and find out. I don't necessarily know. The teachers are going to be great.
And that's at 6 o'clock, right?
Before the lesson starts at 6.
The lesson starts at 6, and you have to have a ticket, but you can get a ticket
at the door.
Okay.
And then the concert, the music will start at 7.
Right. And then there's something, so that's the blues, and then there's something on Sunday too, right?
Yes. And then we kind of do another 180, and we have Martha Masters coming in on Sunday for Sunday Serenade, and she is a classical guitarist. She's really amazing. And she's going to be performing at UAS at the Egan Library. And this is her only performance. She flies in on Saturday, she performs on Sunday, and then she flies out Monday morning. So,
oh, wow.
This is your only chance to see her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that is the deal. And that's on that. Tell me again when that is.
That is this Sunday. It's at UAS Egan Library at 2 p.m.
Okay. Egan Library. And that's a ticketed event.
It is ticketed.
Okay. That's great. And that's cool. And then what happens? Give us a little bit of a preview of what's still left to come, because this goes for yet another week, right?
Yes. So we have the Jack Quartet coming in. They are a string quartet. And they're going to be doing some really funky things, not your typical chamber music. And then we also have jazz coming in for our final weekend. So the Christian Fabian Trio will do a jazz concert at the Crystal next Friday. And then a big band, 10 people are coming in for the Saturday finale concert, which will be jazz.
Oh.
So that's at the Elizabeth Bradovich Hall.
That's the finale.
That's the finale. And we are also doing a dance lesson for that one, too.
And how's it been going back to the one time a year? Do you love it? Because it's kind of like it makes it bigger, right? It's like a giant 3-week-long adventure for y'all.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm pretty sure that everybody else who's working it is enjoying it too. It was the right decision to make.
Nice. Okay. That's really cool. And it's all going to be happening starting tomorrow at noon with the Memphis Gold over at the Jack for a free concert, and then the blues happening, the blues dance, and then the blues cruise, and then on Sunday, what's her name again? On Sunday?
Martha Masters.
Martha Masters is coming. Amazing.
Yes.
And you can find out all of the information at jazzandclassics.org.
That's right.
You can see that all. You can see it here on the flyer if you're watching the stream. And I think we might play. We have a couple minutes, so we might as well listen to a little bit of Memphis Gold as we wrap up the show today. I was just pulling them up to see what we got. And this is called a little something like How I Got Over. So really appreciate you coming in, Rachel. Jazzandclassics.org, as always.
Thanks,
thank
Boston.
You so much. Gwyneth Cheesh. Here's a little Memphis Gold.
You know, we as human beings, we fall in love and then we fall out of love. I can tell you, I've been there and I remember.
Memphis Gold. Tomorrow, Juno Soccer Club, Juno Alaska Music Matters with George Holly, Memphis Gold, and Daniel Kirkwood from the Getting Stranger stops in to also talk a little music. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheesh, have a joyous Juno evening.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno, Auk Bay.